next case of the day is number 041448, Martinez Maldonado against the Attorney General.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Barbara Kleinite. I would like to inform the court that just yesterday I received a copy of a letter sent by opposing counsel to the court, which included a written decision by the prosecuting attorney declining to exercise discretion under the settlement, the class action settlement agreement in Ramos versus Ashcroft. Under that agreement, Mr. Maldonado would only be entitled to new consideration by the Board of Immigration Appeals and the immigration judge if the prosecuting attorney exercised discretion. Since he declined to exercise discretion, it appears to me that that is no longer an issue in this appeal.
You just got a copy of the letter yesterday?
Yes.
It was dated November 17th.
My co-counsel, Ms. McNeil, apparently received a copy but was on vacation or traveling in Peru at the time, and so I did not receive it until yesterday.
Couldn't you seek a judicial determination of this question, or is that precluded by the settlement?
I think the settlement precludes that. In addition, the settlement agreement apparently leaves the issue to the discretion of the Attorney General. And because it's an agreement, I think at that point you're bound by whatever the Attorney General decides. That leaves Mr. Maldonado only with his recourse in this court to review the decisions of the Board of Immigration Appeals.
And the settlement is not subject to review in the district court if you claim the settlement has been violated on...
Well, I think if he can show the district court that the failure to exercise discretion is a breach of the agreement, that might be a remedy in the district court. Personally, I'm not involved in that action. I do not know whether he has a basis upon which he could show the refusal to exercise discretion was a breach of that agreement. But in any event, at this point in this appeal, I cannot argue to this court that he still has an option open by which this court could remand for a further consideration under the settlement agreement. I think anything would have to be done in the district court. I would like to address the board's affirmance without opinion because there's a matter in the decision of the immigration judge which I think makes it clear that the conditions for affirmance without opinion were not satisfied here because the judge's decision was legally and factually incorrect. The statement in the judge's decision that I am referring to is at page 7 where she states, "The hardships alleged and implied, however, are strictly economic in nature and are no different than the hardships faced by other aliens who are forced to leave the United States and return to countries with lower standards of living." That is legally an incorrect analysis for two reasons. First of all, it's not hardship to the alien that's an issue. It's a hardship to the U.S. citizens, the children that are born here. And the reference to other aliens forced to leave the country is incorrect. The judge was not considering the hardship to the children who are citizens of this country. Second, aliens who are forced to leave this country and return, they're not returning. They were born here. They've known no other life but the life in the United States. They would not be returning to Mexico. They would be starting over in Mexico. Third, countries with lower standards of living. This, I think, has never been addressed in the decisions that I have researched. And that is, does the Congress, in its legislative scheme, contemplate a comparative analysis in determining extremely unusual hardship? And if there is such an analysis contemplated, what do you compare? Here, the judge was comparing the children of the petitioner with children of other aliens being returned to countries with lower standards of living. Congress has nowhere evidenced an intent to limit the consideration to countries with lower standards of living. Why not compare it with all children of aliens being deported? Because the significant factor in this case is that Mr. Maldonado is not being deported to Canada or France or Japan, which have comparable standards of living, educational opportunities, medical care opportunities. He's being deported to Mexico. And if you compare his children to children of other people being deported to Mexico, you have drawn a very narrow class. For example, let's say you have a group of children who all have terminal cancer, and the question does one child have an extremely serious medical condition? Well, if you compare that child with other children who have terminal cancer, you can say, well, he's no different than any other child with terminal cancer. But that group is drawn so narrowly there are almost no children who could meet the exception.
One child is deported to Mexico, then he's entitled to have a different result.
If his standard of living here in this country, as provided by the parent, is a high standard of living. Mr. Maldonado has worked 15 years for the same company. He's got a senior position making $940 a week. He has a timeshare in Florida. His children have all the benefits of a high standard of living because his father enjoys the employment and economic benefits of this country. The change in their standard of living would be dramatic. They would have to go to a country where they would be in deprived economic conditions instead of the high standard of living their father provides here. And the judge factually made a mistake in that his findings and her findings were not based on substantial evidence. She concluded that Mr. Maldonado can go to Mexico and find comparable employment, the children will have comparable educational opportunities. But there's no evidence Mr. Maldonado could go and get a high-level job in Mexico, or even a comparable job. He's had to give up his seniority, started an entry-level position somewhere, and certainly could not provide his children with a high standard of living he can provide here in this country. The factual determination that he could find such employment easily is simply not supported by the evidence. Nor is the finding that the children could have educational and support comparable to this country. It's unimaginable to me that they could go to Mexico and their father could provide them with the kind of high standard of living he enjoys here, or that Mexico even has such a thing available if he could make that kind of money. And education, there's no way he could get his children the kind of education they enjoy here in private schools with the income he's making here. And then the judge concludes there's no extreme hardship to the kids without discussing giving up the benefits of United States citizenship and the advantages of living in this country as citizens, the benefits of education, of medical care, of having their father employed in a position where he's got health insurance, where the social benefits of their family and their children, having all their friends and their teachers here, all this, the children would in fact have their lives destroyed if their father were deported. And we submit that the immigration judge made an legally incorrect decision and a factually unsupported decision, and therefore, affirming without opinion could not properly be applied in this case. For the same reasons, we submit that the board erred in failing to reopen and reconsider this case because petitioner submitted to the board arguments and evidence that the immigration judge had departed from the legal guidelines, had not considered the evidence fairly, and had not based his decision on substantial evidence. In addition, we submitted the report of a clinical psychologist, which discusses in depth the hardship to the children, the role of the father in their lives, not just as an economic supporter, but as a caregiver and a guider. We submit that the board also erred then in denying the motion to reopen because it was clear that they had failed in affirming without opinion to consider the inconsistencies, the failures of the immigration judge, the legally incorrect analysis, and the failure to make findings supported by the evidence.
Do we have jurisdiction actually to review this?
Yes, I believe you do. There's one, in terms of the affirmance without opinion, I was unfortunate enough to have found a Seventh Circuit case, Stankovic versus INS, 94 F3rd 1117, in which the court actually considered whether there is jurisdiction to review an affirmance without opinion and held that yes, because it's based on section of the statute which says, which this court stated is not discretionary with the Attorney General. It's not a decision relating to a judgment denying or granting relief. As to the motion to reopen and reconsider, again, we're not asking the court to consider a judgment granting or denying relief. We're asking the court to consider the procedure that was applied by the board and the fact that the immigration judge's decision was not supported by the evidence and was legally incorrect. Therefore, it's the procedure and the failure to comply with the guidelines that we're asking the court to review. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear now from Ms. Kenny.
Please, the court, Jennifer Keeney for the government. These consolidated petitions for review should be dismissed because the ultimate agency decision here is to withhold discretionary relief of cancellation of removal. As this court has found, if the agency's determination is to withhold certain discretionary remedies, that's the end. The court lacks jurisdiction. Both petitions for review in this case deal with the agency's ultimate decision to deny or withhold discretionary relief of cancellation of removal because petitioner failed to show that his United States citizen children would suffer extreme and exceptional hardship if removed to Mexico. Specifically with the first petition for review, this court, as has every court that's dealt with it, is a direct petition for review from a denial of cancellation solely on the issue of hardship. Clearly, this court doesn't have jurisdiction over that determination. With regards to petitioner's challenge that the board improperly affirmed without opinion, this court has already considered that issue and found that it lacks jurisdiction where the underlying decision is discretionary. Because this court lacks jurisdiction to review the merits of the immigration judge's decision, and a review of whether the board properly affirmed that opinion necessarily requires a review of that decision, then the bar to judicial review extends to the denial of or the decision to affirm with that opinion. This is similar with the denial of the motion to reconsider. Again, it requires a review of the merits of the immigration judge's decision, whether there was error of law in fact. And this court has found that any error of law in fact does not override the fact that the court lacks jurisdiction to review the discretionary denial of cancellation. Similarly, with the motion to reopen, the court also lacks jurisdiction over that determination because the court or the board ultimately found that even if it considered the evidence that had been submitted with the motion to reopen, it did not present any additional hardship that would have changed its prior decision. Therefore, the court lacks jurisdiction over both petitions for review. Just to answer a question that you had answered or you'd asked before regarding the Ramos settlement, the settlement agreement clearly provides that there's no review over the discretionary denial under 1252G. If petitioner has any challenges to the application or the interpretation of that agreement, the district court is the only court that has jurisdiction over that determination.
He can go to district court, though.
Right? He can go to district court if he's going to challenge the interpretation or the application of the agreement. The determination whether to exercise prosecutorial discretion under the agreement is clearly precluded in any court, but he can go to the district court if he wants to seek a review of the application of the agreement. And I'd just like to note, just for even if this court were to find that it had jurisdiction, the immigration judge's decision is fully supported by the record and gave full consideration and is in accordance with the board precedent with regards to hardship. So even if there was any issue of whether there was improper fact-finding or analysis, the immigration judge's decision is fully compliant with the board's precedent. There's no further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Kuhn.
Thank you.
Briefly, counsel says that the review of the affirmance without opinion is, does not have jurisdiction, but she cites no case. I would simply remind the court that Stanford versus INS specifically addressed that situation and is contrary to what she said. The court does have jurisdiction. As to her argument that the last agency action was the prosecutor's declining of to exercise discretion under the settlement agreement, if you look at the letter from the prosecutor that counsel submitted to the court, the prosecutor did not exercise discretion. He declined to exercise discretion. Therefore, he left the parties as they were rather than having made a new decision in the case. Therefore, we are left with the latest agency action being the decision by the Board of Immigration Appeals. There's nothing further.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Dito, thanks to both counsel in the case. Case will be taken under advisement. The court has finished the call of the morning, and therefore we will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.